It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. We'll hear from a law enforcement officer in North Carolina who has a complicated perspective on tackling the opioid crisis.
We know in law enforcement you cannot arrest your way out of the substance abuse issue. We've been arresting people for substances and drugs for 30 years, and they're still readily available.
That's coming up in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. On last night's episode of The Legislature Today, senior State House reporter Dave Mistich spoke with Senate Finance Chair Craig Blair and House Minority Finance Chair Mick Bates about the current fiscal situation in West Virginia, including a look at possibilities for the nearly $186 million surplus announced in December's revenue report. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
I do want to ask you, in terms of the surplus, is there any appetite to backfill some of these agencies or sectors of government that have been subject to cuts over the past few years? We've heard about higher education. Do either of you?
I certainly have an appetite for that. And we had the folks from higher ed up with us yesterday in Senate Finance. And they've, the numbers that we have, there's about $50 million that have come out of higher ed. We've also put an additional burden on them with these proposed pay raises. So they're cut pretty much to the bone under the current structure. So we're currently looking at whether or not that's a better use of some of this one-time short-term money, is to backfill some of those holes that they've had.
Very much so. Look, when we do it, when you're tight fiscally, what happens is it gives you an opportunity to contract government. And sometimes it's where government needed contracting. But then there's other places that we contract it, but we need to go back in and fill back in. What we got to be careful of, though, right now is that everybody, this is a really great time to be the finance chairman and a really bad time to be it, too. And I've experienced both sides of this. Everybody's coming in and they're wanting money for, and everybody's got these programs that they want funded. Well, we can't necessarily do that. And I'm in the business, and I think most of us are, is growing the fiscal pie in the state of West Virginia. So when we put money back into these programs, we want to do it in such a way that you know that you're going to see a return on your investment that gets us off the roller coaster that I was speaking of earlier and puts us on an escalator to where we are growing ourselves out and we're not so reliant on the energy industry or the service sector industry. And you guys were absolutely right on the pipeline. That's a short-term investment on that. The good news is that we will be exporting gas through those pipelines out of the state. That's a good thing as well. There's revenue that can be captured from that as well.
Right. One last question specifically about the surplus. I want to keep this very short. Three Republicans over in the House of Delegates yesterday called for a bill that would use the surplus, part of that surplus, to help President Trump fund a wall on the U.S. southern border. Governor Justice tweeted today that he supports the wall. He supports the president in that endeavor. West Virginia Public Broadcasting reached out to the governor's office about that funding proposal, whether or not, you know, his tweet today, you know, equates support for that proposed bill that hasn't yet been introduced. We received no answer from the governor's office on that. Can the both of you respond to that proposal that's come out of the House? We'll start since that's over in your corner.
It's just silliness. I mean, I can give you a long list of needs that we have here in West Virginia, and a lot of uses for $10 million that would go way ahead about, building a wall in, on the southern border. So we need to, create jobs. We're doing any construction around here, it needs to be in West Virginia. So this is a distraction, I'm not sure what motivated them to do this, but we need to focus on real problems that West Virginians have today here in West Virginia. So that's my response to that.
Senator?
I'm supportive of the president's wall, but in West Virginia, $10 million can be better spent. And look, we've got an economy that, in a population that is declining, the illegals, aliens, are not even interested in coming to West Virginia, okay? And with that said, we can spend our $10 million somewhere else, taking and building the economy so that our people that are living in West Virginia, our families that are living in West Virginia, will have a better opportunity into the future. This is a national issue. I know that some other states have been doing this as well. putting it out there. And I think it's a message that we support the president. I get that, but in reality, we're not going to see the $10 million pass the West Virginia legislature to go towards the wall when we have other needs to take care of, priorities.
Right. Appreciate that answer from both of you guys.
That was Dave Mistich speaking with Senate Finance Chair Craig Blair and House Minority Chair Mick Bates on the legislature today. To watch or listen to the full episode, visit our website, wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Cloudy skies today. There's a chance of rain, sleet, or snow with highs in the 30s and low 40s. Chance of rain or snow tonight with lows in the 30s. Rain or snow continues tomorrow with highs in the 30s and low 40s. And on Saturday, there's a chance of rain, sleet, or snow with highs in the 30s and 40s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by CAMC Neurology Services, specializing in treatment of epilepsy, stroke, and headaches. More at camc.org/neuro. Across the country, states are beginning to give law enforcement officers the discretion to refer drug offenders to treatment rather than arresting them. After a recent harm reduction panel at West Virginia University, Carol Lofton talked with Donnie Varnell, one of the speakers and a retired law enforcement officer. Varnell is now working as a consultant with police departments and the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition to expand North Carolina's efforts in law enforcement-assisted diversion.
So one thing I want to talk about today is this concept of, can you arrest your way out of addiction?
We know in law enforcement you cannot arrest your way out of the substance abuse issue. We've been arresting people for substances and drugs for 30 years, and they're still readily available. I think there's some justification to the law enforcement work within substance abuse, that there are people that are causing a lot of grief and death and misery by working on people's addiction to get rich. But as far as the individual person that is suffering with addiction or substance disorder, arresting them doesn't help them. It doesn't make them stop. And I think in law enforcement, you've seen the shift now to divert people from incarceration into services.
If you had an officer who say, you know, officers tend to know people in their beats pretty well. So, you know, they might say, hey, Bob, looks like, you know, you're using again today. Are you ready to get into treatment? And if they say yes, do they have kind of options to start that process for them or to connect them with people, say, hey, you know, I want you to call this person?
Yeah, good question. That's different from community to community in North Carolina. Also, I don't want to give this grandiose idea that North Carolina is a Shangri-La of harm reduction. But what we try to do is this: we give everybody training now. It's called crisis intervention training, and we show them in those training scenarios. If you come up to someone that is obviously having a mental crisis or a substance abuse crisis, you know, here's what you do. Besides putting them in jail, and by the way, that used to be the answer. Back in the early 90s, the mental health budgets for most states were just gutted. And so all these standalone mental health hospitals that the state ran in North Carolina and across the nation were shut down. And those patients were just put out on the street with 30 days worth of medication. And now that became a law enforcement problem, right? So instead of having to deal with them at the law enforcement level or enforcement, we show them, here's the number in your county to call. And sometimes it is disjointed, and sometimes it is, look, this lady's going to call you in the morning. And that doesn't always work. But in a lot of counties, we have found the avenue that officer makes a phone call, that crisis team comes out, or you drive someone to a treatment center and drop them off. And it works.
During your presentation, you referred to harm reduction as the hippy-dippy approach. So how do you get law enforcement on board with it?
With us, it's the message and the messenger. You have to know your audience. And when I speak to law enforcement, because I am law enforcement, I have some credibility. That's true, right? If I went into the hardcore user community, you know, I'm not who they want to speak to. You know, they want to see someone they trust, someone that understands them. And so when we speak to law enforcement or we speak to that community, we try to use a law enforcement person and a harm reduction person with them. And so that gives the harm reduction person some credibility, and because they're with the law enforcement guy. And then the law enforcement personnel really understands the language, really understands what they're thinking. But also remember that out of 100 people, there's still 10 in that room that are not buying it. But that's okay, right? The trick is to reach as many people as possible. And then that starts the movement. There's always going to be people that believe any drug is a bad drug.
Have you had law enforcement push back against harm reduction when it's been introduced into a community?
Yes. I mean, and pushback's a kind of a big word. We have had two or three agencies in the same county where one will buy into it and then one won't. That doesn't mean they're pushing back. It just, they'll say, no, we don't want to participate in that particular program. And that's usually from the very top. It's usually because whatever executive that makes the decision personally doesn't feel good about that program or doesn't think he has the resources to support that program. Because it still comes down to, can you support it with manpower or money or whatever. So usually what we find is anybody that doesn't buy into a program or doesn't participate, it's usually a personal opinion at a high level. And the trick is to show them that it worked in the other agency, and then they almost always come on board.
When you say law enforcement assisted diversion, what do you mean by that?
Well, what law enforcement assisted diversion is that it's a personal decision on law enforcement if a person is arrested or not. We call that discretion. So 5 years ago, if I caught you with heroin in your pocket in Fayetteville, you went to jail. That's just how that works, right? Because it's, by the way, it's against the law. It's against a bunch of laws in North Carolina. But now in Fayetteville, if I catch you with heroin in your pocket, I have the discretion to see if you want to seek services instead of going to jail. And then, of course, I take your narcotics away from you. You can't have those. And I take you to a center, and then they start a wraparound service program that's right for you, right? And there's no cookie-cutter solution to this. Because you might not need detox. You might need a driver's license or a safe place to live is what we find is most commonly needed. And then that law enforcement officer goes back onto the street. And so it's assisted by law enforcement to the point that he's the one that takes you to the program. But after that, law enforcement can get away from it and go back to work and not spend 6 hours or 3 hours on a really low-level petty drug offense and then have to go to court three times and then have the person not get any assistance through court and by the way, you know you don't go to jail for drugs, right? I mean, you don't go to prison for having heroin in your pocket. You're in jail for 3 hours and then you get out and there's no room in prison for you to at that point. So even people that think you should be punished for drugs, that's not working either because you don't actually go to jail for that bag of heroin in your pocket. You just come back on the street after you haven't used for 72 hours and now you're going to use and you're going to overdose. So the law enforcement assisted diversion takes the person out of the criminal justice system, which is good for criminal justice system and the courts, and puts them into treatment. It costs $78 a day for you to sit in jail in North Carolina. If you sit in jail and drink water, it's $78 a day. If I put you in a wraparound treatment program, it costs $24 a day. So even on the monetary side for the state, it's a absolute win. You're saving so much money by putting a person in the program instead of putting them into the court system.
That was Kara Lofton speaking with Donnie Varnell, retired police officer in North Carolina. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.